Welcome to Ayurvedic Healing and Beyond podcast.
Namaste, Saduji.
Namaste, Jai Gangai.
Real honor to have you. Thank you so much.
Wonderful to be with you.
So, Saduji, coming directly to the question. If you were to give a crash course on the essence of your teachings, how would you break that down?
I think the essence would be, in one line, grace does not discriminate. But going a little bit deeper, I think one of the things that a lot of people suffer from these days is an experience that they are lacking in some way. I'm not beautiful enough. I'm not rich enough. I'm not successful enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not happy enough. I'm not whatever it may be. I'm not that enough. Therefore, I don't feel worthy. And what we're dealing with these days is a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, a lot of mental health issues, a lot of relationship issues. Because if I don't feel worthy on a deep level of love, if I don't feel worthy of happiness, then I'm not going to be able to be in relationship in a way that is healthy. Because we don't feel worthy, we look at spirituality, we look at that which we consider grace, and we think, well, it's not, I'm not going to get it. I'm not beautiful enough or rich enough or pure enough, good enough, worthy enough, spiritual enough. And for me, I think really one of my most important personal lessons that I've been trying to share as much as possible is grace does not discriminate.
That's really profound.
It doesn't matter if you cheated on your taxes. I mean, it matters to the government. It just doesn't matter to grace. You still may go to jail, but grace is still there with you. It doesn't matter to grace if you got up this morning and meditated, or you hit the snooze alarm and you went back to sleep. There is nothing you can do to turn yourself to a point where grace would not be available for you. Grace is there for all of us, regardless of what we've done, regardless of what's happened to us, regardless of anything that has to do with this physical body and its karmic journey here on earth. Grace is there. The only thing that's required is opening our hearts. And that takes us really, I think, into the other core aspect for me that I have learned and then really try to share with people as much as possible, which is just open your heart. Just trust. Just recognize and realize that the universe, the divine, whatever word you use, whatever name you say God, you say source, you say supreme reality, you say Bhagwan Krishna, you say Bhagwan Ram, you say Jesus Christ, you say Allah, you say the tree in your backyard. It doesn't matter. But that divine presence not only exists, but is there for you. Open into it. Trust, fall into it. Have faith into it. The reason that so many of us don't have faith is because we see the divine as, you know, kind of a mix between a vending machine and an ATM, where we expect that, you know, you go in, you put your money in, you push the button, and what you want should come out. You walk up to an ATM, you stick in your card, you get money.
Exactly.
We expect that God should be like that. You go to the temple. You do your puja, you do your abhishek, you do your japa. Therefore, my kids should get into the university I want them to get into. I should get the job I want. The person I want to marry should want to marry me. I should never get sick or die. Nobody I love should ever get sick or die. And we've got this concept that somehow God is like that machine. And if I do what I think a good person should do, and what I get is what I don't want, we assume either the machine is broken, God is not there for me. God is not good. There is no God. God doesn't like me. It's not written into my Bhagya. My stars are in the wrong place. Whatever we say. But we just assume that the universe is not there for us. And it is. But it's going to give you exactly what you need, exactly when you need it, not necessarily what's on your list. So the second aspect is really open your heart and trust, which we can only do when we let go. And that's the third, and I would say for now at least, the last part of it is, if I'm holding very tightly to something, whether it's some attachment, some desire, I've got to get into this university, I've got to get this job, I've got to make $1 million, I've got to lose 10 pounds, whatever it may be. If I'm holding really tightly to that, that thing is going to make me stuck. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's an emotion, sometimes it's anger, sometimes I'm holding on to a grudge. I'm holding on to an identification. I am the one who was harmed or abused or abandoned or cheated or betrayed. And we hold on to that identity. We hold on to our anger at the person who did it to us. We hold on to jealousy. You see this a lot in families. They're nicer to her or him than me. I'm the one who has to do this. We hold on to these roles and identities and grudges and anger, expectations, attachments, and they are what makes us stuck. Mm. In order for grace to flow, we have to be not only open, but there actually has to be space. There's a beautiful story of a man who was a great spiritual seeker. And decided, okay, I'm ready for enlightenment. And he asked everybody, who's the most enlightened master who can give me enlightenment? And everybody sent him to this one guru sitting on the mountain. So he goes and he walks for 2 weeks and traverses the river and climbs the mountain. And he gets there and he bows at the guru's feet and says, I'm here for enlightenment. This is all what I've learned. This is all what I've done. This is what I need. These are my challenges. Now I just need
enlightenment.
Enlightenment. And the guru says, have a cup of tea. The man's like, tea? I didn't come for tea. I came for enlightenment. And the guru says, and the guru goes in the back of the cave and comes back with a teapot and two cups and he puts them there and he starts to pour. And he's pouring tea and he pours into the cup. And the cup is getting fuller and fuller and he keeps pouring. And now the tea is spilling all out over the top of the cup and on the floor of the cave. And the man says, what are you doing? Stop. It's overflowing. The cup can't hold anymore. And the guru says, your mind is like this cup. You're so full of who you think you are, what you think you know, what you think you need, that there's no space for me to give you anything. Just like I can't give you more tea till you drink this tea, I can't give you anything until you empty yourself. And so it means let go. It means forgive. Mm-hmm. Whatever grudges we're holding on to, we forgive, we let go. We let go of these attachments. We let go of the expectations. We let go of all of that that is, you know, squeezing us, yeah, and keeping us stuck. And I say this from personal experience. I mean, this is not something that it wasn't like the Buddha where, you know, I sat under a tree and awareness came. These are the lessons that I've learned on my path. And so they're the ones that have enabled me to be healed, that have enabled me to be transformed. And you could sum it up, I guess, in one last piece, which is a shift from the Hollywood mindset to the Himalayan mindset. You know, my memoir is Hollywood to the Himalayas. And of course, it's the physical journey, of course, that my physical body took from Hollywood to the Himalayas, my childhood in Los Angeles, but quite literally Hollywood, to the Himalayas when mm-hmm. I was 25, and I've been there since. But that's my physical life journey. You don't have to go to the Himalayas to have healing, to have transformation, to have this change, to have the awakening. But you do have to make this mindset shift from what I call the Hollywood way of thinking that says you are your body. Mm. I mean, we understand it as the Hollywood way. Sadly, it's now also the way in most of the rest of the world, but it's not the way of our traditional Indian culture. The Hollywood way of thinking says you are your body, the size, the shape, the color. You are the bank account. You are the career. You are your success level by external measures. You are your relationship. You are what you've done. You are what's happened to you. But that's who you are. And so we suffer. We suffer that feeling of not enoughness, constantly feeling like we need more and more, manmange, more and more and more, right? Just never ending. And we bring suffering unto others. Our anger, our jealousies, our need for shopping therapy, food therapy, drink therapy, all of this to feel full when I feel empty. And the Himalayan way of thinking says, you have a body, but you're not the body. Hmm. You are soul, you are spirit, you are consciousness, you are full, you are purna. You are that wholeness. You are that soul, that spirit, that consciousness, that divinity. You are not separate. Aham brahmasmi. Tatvam asi soham. Whatever mool mantra we look at, they all tell us the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so the teaching really is that, like, let go of the Hollywood way of thinking. You're not your body. You're not your story. You're not your identity. Let go of that complex. Mm-hmm. Recognize that you are infinite soul, spirit, divinity. And that's the end of suffering. And it's definitely not easy, obviously. It is quite simple. It's not easy. It's why we have a sadhana practice. Mm-hmm. But if I can do it, anyone can do it. And that's, for me, what's so exciting about teaching is, like, I didn't come out of the womb like this. You know, I grew up in LA as a very typical, in so many ways, American girl, and wasn't religious, wasn't spiritual, suffered a lot internally, emotionally. I had so much abundance and prosperity and privilege and blessings, incredible, incredible blessings. And also a lot of suffering. Mm-hmm. And if I can overcome
what you went
through, ignorance, yeah, both what I went through, but also
the transformation.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we blame what we go through for how we are. And it's not actually what we go through. It's what our mind does to what we go through. Mm-hmm. So someone harms you. They abuse you. They betray you, they cheat you. That happened. That which actually harms us is what our mind does to it, which is it tells us a story about ourselves. You're stupid. You let it happen, or you deserved it to happen. Therefore, you're wrong, you're bad, you're impure. We tell stories about that person. They are fill in the blank of things you can't say on the air. Mm-hmm. We make up a whole narrative about it, and that narrative becomes our jail cell. We literally build the bricks on the walls of a jail in which we enclose ourselves mm-hmm. with that narrative that we tell ourselves. So if I could by God's grace, by the grace of my guru, by the grace of these incredible teachings and wisdom and meditative practice and the grace of the sacred Ganga River, if I could have that transformation, so can anyone.
Hmm. So, Satviji, coming, if I have to, you know, break it down, there are three things that came very dominant in your, whatever you said right now. One is you said grace, discrimination, and the other thing is whatever is holding on, like forgiveness, victim mentality. Now, what is grace? If you were to make a child understand when you say grace is there, of course, we understand, but yeah, if people have to really define grace.
I think for me, grace is the presence, the omnipresence, rather. The omnipresence of divinity.
Hmm.
It's that which makes a flower open its petals to the rising sun. It's that which makes apple trees give us apples. It's that which you experience when you look into the eyes of a newborn child. It's that which we feel much more deeply at certain times in our life, but is always there. It's just our instruments are not quite so finely tuned. I think if you asked mystics and rishis and saints and enlightened people, they would feel grace all the time. Most of us experience it only in certain moments, but it's an omnipresence that you just have to tune into. Like, you know, you turn on a TV, for example, and a show comes on. Well, the show didn't start because you turned on your TV. It's been broadcasting. You just happen to turn on your TV now. It's not like you hit the remote and turn it on and they say, oh, wait, wait, get ready, set, roll, lights, camera, action, because now you've turned on your TV. It's broadcasting. Transmission is on. You turn on the TV, you turn on that channel. That's up to you.
So opening the heart, is that opening?
Opening the heart, exactly. Opening the heart, letting go, creating space. I mean, my prayer every day, and it has not changed in the 27 and a half years that I've been in India. My prayer every day is just, oh God, empty me. Empty me. I mean, imagine that you were that man in the cave and the guru had made you tea. And imagine that it was the best tea you'd ever drank. That it was nectar. It was amrit. Well, you would want to empty the cup as fast as you can so that you could get another cup.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, that experience when grace flows through is so exquisite that all you want is more.
Mm.
But you become really palpably aware of the fact that it's your own nonsense that blocks it. I mean, I know in my life when I act in ways that are not in my highest self, the person I may have spoken to is not actually the one most harmed by it. But it's me, because in that moment, I've blocked myself from grace. Mm-hmm. If I've allowed my internal channel to get blocked up with anger or frustration or ego or ignorance or jealousy or desire or despair or whatever it may be, I've blocked grace. So even though I may say something to you that wasn't quite so nice, and then I later regret it and I say, I'm so sorry, whatever, you're not actually the most injured party. I'm the most injured party because I've blocked grace from myself. And that's why we let go. You know, when we perform a yajna ceremony, the fire ceremony, we offer all of the ahuti into the fire. Why? To free ourselves, to free ourselves. It's not that God needs our rice or God needs our ghee. God's not sitting somewhere saying, hey, when is somebody going to give me some rice or some ghee? We offer them as a way for us to offer that within us
mm-hmm.
that is not that pure divinity. And of course, we know the core of who we are is. It's just, it's the psyche, it's the mind, it's the stories, it's the narratives, it's the ego, it's the games the mind plays. And so my prayer is always just empty me more and more, free me more and more from the games of the mind so that I can be freer and freer, more and more open.
So, Sataji, when we say grace is that intelligence that is passing through us, can we also call
it
that?
It's absolutely, it's an omnipresence. It's absolutely intelligent. It's absolutely intelligent.
It's an intelligence.
Yes, that is it's absolutely making, intelligence, yeah. But it's not only intelligence. It's also love. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's truth. Mm-hmm. It's, you could say it's Satchitananda.
Satchitananda.
Right? Yes. I mean, that's the, mm-hmm. we say grace, we say God, we say Satchitananda, mm-hmm. That's Brahman, you know, the entire universe, the supreme reality, all that is, whatever word we may use. But to me, grace feels much more like a palpable feeling. Mm. Like it's one thing to know Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. I am the supreme reality. That isn't for me a tangible experience. I can certainly experience it in meditation in terms of that melting and merging into all that is, the loss of the individual self. But in terms of an energy of divinity, that which feels really palpable to me, grace feels in some way much more palpable to me than just supreme reality.
So grace is that tangible feeling of this cosmic energy?
Yeah, but I wouldn't say it's a feeling, because what that means is if I can't feel it, grace isn't there. It's like saying that there's no TV show till I turn my TV on. Mm. So I would say it is the for me, it's tangible, omnipresence of the divine. Mm. And when we turn to it, we feel it.
So we all have access to it, irrespective of. So we all have access to this, irrespective of. That's why you said it's
absolutely
non-discriminatory.
Absolutely.
And coming to the word, you know, you mentioned empty me, and one of them is forgiveness.
Yeah.
And today, you know, especially being an Ayurvedic doctor, you see a lot of patients, they have huge issues to not to forgive.
Yeah.
Sometimes the biggest problem is, it's not about not forgiving somebody else. It's forgiving themselves.
Yeah.
And I see, I can't forgive myself for how I treated myself. Mm-hmm. Or they would say, I can't forgive myself that I allowed somebody else to do that to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these
mm-hmm.
kind of.
Yeah.
So I think when it comes to my profession of healing and treating people, how, in your language, can we help people understand why forgiveness is important? And how do we initiate forgiveness if we are finding it difficult?
Great. So first of all, I think what's really important to realize is we don't forgive, whether someone else or ourselves, because the action is forgivable. The hang up that most of us have is, well, what they've done is unforgivable.
Hmm.
And in some cases, maybe. I mean, there are things people have done to us that are against the law, that if they went, you know, if we took them to court, they would end up in jail. So it's not forgivable from a legal standpoint. It's not forgivable from a moral or ethical standpoint. What they did violates all of our moral principles, our ethical principles. It's not forgivable from a dharmic standpoint. What they did is against dharma. We don't forgive because what somebody did is forgivable. So we need to first stop weighing the action. We're not looking at the action. It doesn't actually matter what the action is. And I feel...
You mean the act that made you, that resentment
exactly.
or hurt?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's say that let's say you trusted me. I was an investment banker and your friend, and I said, Dr. Vigneshji, I want you to invest all of the money that you've made with me. I'm going to triple it in 1 year. And you trust me. Mm-hmm. And I lose all your money. Maybe I lose it by accident. Maybe my intentions were good, but I was just a really bad investment banker. Or maybe my intentions were not good. Maybe I knew from the beginning I'm just scamming you. Mm-hmm. Either way, that's what I mean by the action. The action is I took your money, I lost your money. Now you are angry at me. You can't forgive me. You also can't forgive yourself
that I
for being so stupid to hand over all of your money. That's a big thing, a little thing. We're walking, I step on your toe. Okay. So little thing, big thing. What I'm saying is it doesn't matter which it is. And I feel comfortable saying this as someone to whom very big things were done. If I were someone who had not experienced actual abuse, if I was not someone who had experienced actual abandonment.
You mean you walked the talk, you really went through. So.
Exactly, meaning I know what it's like to have to forgive that which is unforgivable by both legal, moral, ethical, dharmic standpoints. The first step to forgiveness is it doesn't matter what you are forgiving. Are you forgiving someone who stepped on your toe, stole all of your money, or abused you in some other way? It doesn't matter what it is. Because you forgive not based on what they did. You forgive for one reason and one reason only. Because you deserve to be free. And if you don't forgive, you can never be free. So whether you're angry at me for stepping on your toe, or you're angry at me for stealing all of your money, or I was holding on to anger about the abuse that I went through. Either way, it makes you stuck and it makes you not be able to experience peace, joy, freedom in life. So we forgive not because what they did was okay, not because we are saying that was great, please do it again. Not because we're saying to the universe, hey, absolve them of their karmic dues. Let them get their karmic dues.
Whatever.
Whatever it may be. We don't have any control over that anyway. The law of karma is the law of karma. You forgive because you deserve to be free. Whatever you've done to someone, whatever they've done to you, the core truth of who you are is soul, is spirit, is consciousness, is freedom. You deserve to experience that internal freedom. If you did something that's against the law, you may get locked up in jail. Body is in jail. But internally, you still should be free. Mm-hmm. That freedom I'm talking about is internal. So we forgive people because if we don't forgive them, we're making ourselves stuck. And if it's something I've done, either way, what you do is you recognize everyone is moving through this world with a toolkit. And the toolkit is based in most part on our family of origin, our childhood, our education, the culture when we were young. What did you get into your toolbox? Do you have patience in your toolbox? Do you have understanding in your toolbox? Do you have tenderness and love and compassion and restraint in your toolbox or not? Mm-hmm. And if someone acts in impatience, in violence, in meanness, it's because in that moment when love and caring and compassion was required, they just didn't have it in their toolbox. And if you're angry at yourself, in that moment, you didn't have what was required in your toolbox. Like, as you said, people come and they're angry that they let somebody do this to them, meaning probably they let somebody feed them too much or they let somebody convince them that something was good. The power of skepticism in their toolbox. They believed. Somebody said to them, oh, it's good for you, eat it. They believed. Okay. That skepticism, that discrimination, that curiosity that said, let me Let me find out. Let me research. Mm-hmm. They didn't have it. Okay. But help them understand they're here now. They're here now. And that anger is a much bigger impediment to both their spiritual progress as well as their physical progress. As you know, that role of our mind and our bodies. What I'm holding on to in anger harms my body. And so that anger they're having, that guilt they're having, is now the impediment to them not only being happy and free emotionally, but also to their body healing. Help them understand that. That they need to let go because spiritually they deserve to be free and physically they need to heal.
I think when you're talking about the only reason that you need to forgive is you need to be free.
Yeah.
Now this, there are two statements that I heard about which could be a good definition for forgiveness. It's forgiveness is the best revenge so that you're free and you know, you don't give the other person any more power.
Absolutely.
And there's another profound definition that I heard about forgiveness. It's like forgiveness is acceptance of an apology that you'll never get.
Beautiful. It's beautiful. And the other piece that goes along with that is anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other guy to die.
There's another one. Anger is one letter short of danger.
There you go. There you go. Exactly.
I think that's where forgiveness plays a very powerful role in many people's chronic illnesses, terminal disease. You know, they carry that grief. How did I do this and how did I let this happen and how did I give this person so much power that I trusted on this person? Well, take the lesson, move on.
Pooja Swamiji always says, whenever you wake up, it's morning. So just help them understand, here you are. I mean, this is grace that now you have woken up, you have realized you're here. That which you experienced, you cannot rewind life. But your future, that which is predestined for you, next week, next month, next year, in this moment, is the pre that is determining your future. Mm-hmm. So help them understand that. Your decision right now to hold on to this anger and guilt or let it go, that is the action, the karma that's determining your future.
So let's say somebody says, yes, I understand all this, but I still struggle to forgive. Mm-hmm. I'm with so much of resentment and anger. Mm-hmm. What will be the baby steps to start?
So the first piece is the toolkit piece. Really help them understand that that person who did this, it wasn't that they woke up in the morning and said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to really hurt this person. Nobody does that. Nobody wakes up in the morning plotting and planning to make somebody else's life miserable. We do it because in our own anger, in our own confusion, in our own ignorance, in an empty toolbox, we don't have the tools that are needed. We don't have the honesty, the forbearance, the compassion, the loyalty, the faith, the inner strength to act in ways that are moral, ethical, dharmic. And so we act in ways that aren't. So help them understand that that person did not wake up in the morning plotting and planning to hurt them. Mm-hmm. That it was just because they did not have the tools. Take them to the edge of the ocean. This is what I did in Ganga. It's what Pooja Swamiji sent me into Ganga to do. Hold the water of the ocean and allow them to really feel all of the anger and all of the stories and the narratives that are associated with that anger and guilt. Feel it and pull it up and offer it into the ocean water that they're holding in their hands and then offer that water back to the ocean. And to just keep doing it until they feel like they've been able to really pull it up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you do yajna fires here, but they're really powerful for healing. Let people write down on paper, you know, what they're angry about, a letter to the person they're angry at, whether it's themselves or the other person, burn it.
It's very symbolic, but it frees them
a
lot.
It's huge. It's huge. Yeah.
That's very powerful.
But I think really the first most important step is they have to deeply, deeply understand it is my anger. It's not what the other guy did. It's my anger that is making me stuck. Hmm. Imagine that you had somebody sitting in front of you who was dying of a tumor.
Tumor. Mm-hmm.
Brain tumor, breast tumor, stomach tumor, esophageal tumor, wherever it is. And they're sitting before you and they've got their MRI scans or their CT scans or their x-rays, lung cancer, tumor, whatever it may be. And they're showing you their reports and they're saying, the doctors want to operate on me. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'm ready to let it go. Now, there's no danger in the operation. The doctors have assured them no danger whatsoever. Not even a long recovery period. Mm-hmm. They just have to be prepared to let the tumor go. Now, could you imagine the ridiculousness of somebody saying, no, I don't want it out?
It's like that.
It's ridiculous. They're going to die. Just like that. No risk operation, no recovery period, but they don't want to let go of the tumor.
That's very profound. I think many people are not able to have a different perspective to look at it like this.
And that's exactly what our anger is. It's exactly what our grudges are. They're tumors inside of us. They grow. And they kill us.
Somewhere they are holding on to, if I can't inflict the same pain back, yep. I cannot let go. I cannot be free. What if I forget that?
All they've done is they've locked themselves up in jail with the person who did that. Hmm. That guy's in his own karmic jail for whatever wrong deeds they've done. But our anger just essentially says, Cello, you're in jail. No problem. I'll join you.
There's a saying, sometimes the jailer and the prisoner are actually going through the same thing.
But the jailer is free. The jailer can leave. The jailer comes and goes.
And you can actually leave. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Swamiji.
Of course.
This was such a profound insight. And I think the idea that grace is, it's always there. It's just that, are you going to be open and receive it?
Yeah.
It's your choice.
Absolutely.
And we do need to exercise that choice so that we are relaxed. And I think when we access grace, the ability to let go becomes an effortless process. Thank you, Swamiji.
Of course.
It was really a pleasure to have you.
Such a joy. And thank you so much for all of the beautiful, beautiful work that you're doing to bring real wellness to people.
Same like you. It's a mutual feeling.
Thank you for listening to Ayurvedic Healing and Beyond.